You are listening to episode 148 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, a lesson in marketing.
Welcome to episode 148 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is July the 26th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my Herculean brother, James Furlough.
Hey there! How is it going, man?
Pretty good, pretty good.
What did you just call me?
The Herculean brother.
It's a Herculean brother.
Yeah, obviously you didn't go to the movies this weekend.
No.
Yeah, man. Hercules came out this weekend, and that really stupid-looking Lucy movie came out with ScarJo.
Really? You think that movie looks stupid?
I have a personal, like, gripe with that entire plot line of we only use 10% of our brain. It's a factoid that I remember when I learned it in freaking middle school and thinking that doesn't make any sense. And then, like, a few years later, like, the internet happened and you could actually look it up and you're like, it doesn't make any sense. This is stupid. It doesn't even pass the basic test, like sniff tests. It's funny because this was really interesting. This week I learned that there was a psychologist like the 1910s who conjectured that we don't use all of our brain, that there's like that, you know, maybe we only use a small fraction of it, and that is like was the premise of like that factoid where that came from. And then when we actually started doing brain scans, we only look at the really, really super active parts of the brain when we're looking at it, and so those parts of the brain, it looks like, yeah, maybe there's only 10% actually actively doing stuff. But that's the part that's running at 90%, where the rest of the brain is just idling, but it's all working all the time. It just drives me nuts. I think it's just, I think it actually doesn't look like a terrible movie, but I just can't get over the premise. Like,
oh, that's fair. That's funny. Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. I always wonder if it's like maybe it's just we understand 10% of how the brain works.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But how can you hate a ScarJo in a Morgan Freeman movie?
It's awesome. Yeah, exactly.
I actually really want to see Hercules. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm pretty dang excited.
Yeah, do you think it'll actually be... Here's a question. Are you excited about Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah. So I was very excited about it. Just, I liked the trailer and stuff. And then the reviews started coming up this week. And, you know, I do the Rotten Tomatoes thing. And so early on, it was getting like 100%. I was like, usually like when it first starts getting reviews, you're like, it's got 3 reviews and they're all positive, so it's got 100%. It doesn't mean anything. So I click on it to see how many reviews it had. It had 21 reviews and was still at 100%. I was like, okay, I'm sold.
Wow, I must seriously be in the minority here, because I've got a couple friends where they're like, they're pumped. They're like, this is going to be the best movie of the year. And I'm just like, I really have zero interest in it. I will go see it simply because there's tie-ins to the other movies, and I feel compelled to catch those. But and maybe I'm just wrong. Maybe I'm missing something, and I need to go back and watch some more trailers or something. Because I'm just like, this looks like the dumbest movie of all of them.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm very serious.
That's super funny.
It just seems totally campy. Like, oh wow, we're back in the 90s. So great, with just upgraded graphics.
What?
I know.
How are you coming to this conclusion? This is crazy to me.
I like I said, I must be, now that you've said it, now I'm like, because the other guys, they get excited about anything, you know, and I'm like, whatever. You know, that's, I get it. You know, of course, there's things that I get excited about that they're like, meh, I don't know. And the other movie was not great enough for me to remember, but it was like when maybe this is a sign of me getting older. This could be bad.
Right?
When Winter Soldier came out, I was like, eh.
Okay.
It was good. I enjoyed it, but, you know, I wasn't like, yeah, that was amazing.
You and I had the same takeaway. I do, unfortunately, horrifyingly think it's a sign of us getting older. But in our defense, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like it was a great movie. The problem is we're old enough now to, like, recognize that. That's where the problem is. But whatever.
Yeah. Oh, no, I remember what it was. It was Spider-Man was the other one I was comparing it to. And I really liked that one. And they were like, eh, Spider-Man 2 was lame. And they're like, but Winter Soldier was amazing.
Like, oh, yeah.
Okay, look, I'm not extreme like that. They're both good. I will end up owning both of them.
Right.
You know, let's be clear. I'm just, Spider-Man 2 is better. And Winter Soldier was not as good. So, I don't know.
You were all about the love story with Gwen.
That's true, I was. That's
Peter.
True.
That's true. Yeah, it's funny. Like, yesterday, I set up on my iTunes radio, I set up a country channel, and, like, I had to stop listening to it during work because it was, like, it's all, like, love songs and everything. And I was like, oh, man, I want real love. Like, and I was like, this is stupid. Like, flip over to, like, a rap station. I want to party. I want to be, it's Friday. It's, you know, have fun.
How did you do country then? I don't understand.
Well, see, that was my thing is, like, I put in, like, all of these, like, all the songs. Like, the station is called I Love This Bar. Like, that's the song that the entire station is based off of. And they're not a bunch of, like, country drinking songs. That's what I was looking for. It's just a bunch of love songs. Oh, man. But see, the problem is I think iTunes knows me. But... No. So, you know what, James, though? We're actually here to talk about iTunes, but not movies and music. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
I actually want to hear your disclosure. Like, where are you right now?
So I am overlooking the Noe Valley of San Francisco. I'm sitting on the porch of a friend's place. If you paid attention to the date, as we called it out at the beginning of the show, it's a Saturday morning, and I have a fun-filled weekend in San Francisco. So I came up last night, and I'm broadcasting from the Bay.
Nice. Very cool. Sweet. My disclosure is that I work for HP, but I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Oh, come on. Just own it, man. One of these shows, you just got to be like, you know, this week, I am the official HP representative. What I say goes.
That will be my last week.
Right. Okay. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we tweet interesting things and send interesting pictures and have interesting blogs. You can do that. My Twitter account is at Matthew D. Furlow, and my Instagram is NextWiggin4.
I am James Furlow. Everywhere.
Everywhere. Todos. Also, we recommend highly, this is what we're going to say, go to furloughbros.com. It's a pretty cool little website. It's got all sorts of clicks and links and whatnot. All the articles we talk about during the show today are going to be there for your perusal. So if there's anything you want to see, anything you want to go deeper, any videos or anything like that, yeah, check it out.
I'll do that.
Awesome. So, okay, let's see here. Cool. I'm up first. So we sometimes I love the marketing campaign side of the tech industry, and this week was great, and especially because I love the Samsung Apple battle in their advertising, because
yeah,
they're such different companies, and sometimes Samsung's really effective and annoyingly effective and at beating up Apple, and then sometimes they're just befuddling. Like, I can't understand what they're doing. So Samsung has got this new ad that they dropped this week, where they
I didn't see it, so you're gonna have to give me a a verbal retelling of it.
Oh, it's super exciting. So, basically what happens is there's two dudes sitting in a coffee shop, and one's guy's got an iPhone and one's got a Samsung Galaxy S5. Okay. And the guy on the iPhone is looking at articles and goes, oh man, super exciting, like new bigger iPhone's coming, can't wait for that. And then his buddy starts making fun of the fact that he's got this, like, you know, small little screen, and you know, if you came over to the Samsung side of the river, you could get, you know, could have had this big screen the whole time, you know, which is a pretty, you know, it's a, okay, I get what you're saying. The thing is that they never actually mentioned the name, the Samsung Galaxy S5. I know that it was that because I know what they look like. I can tell what they look like. And I had to, like, watch the video more than once to go, okay, yeah, it is the Samsung. It is the Galaxy. They just talk about the large screen iPhone that's coming in a couple of months.
All right, like, now, are you sure that Samsung's the one who made it?
They took ownership of it. It was their, you know, their YouTube account. I mean, it's just like,
because that would be kind of hilarious. Apple pretending to do a horrible Samsung commercial.
That would actually be really funny. That actually would be really funny. That would be dang clever.
Apple's above that. They would never do that. But Samsung, they should do parody iPhone commercials. In the sense of, like, it's not making fun of them, but just, like, poorly done.
Yeah, exactly.
Confuse people. That would be hilarious.
That would be really funny. Be very effective. I couldn't, because, I mean, honestly, like, this commercial kind of, like, it's like Samsung was doing that. That was like what their goal was. It's ridiculous. It's hilarious. And it's like they're trying to, especially because within the smartphone market and with the iPhone in general, like, it's so well known that it locks the market up. Like, when the next iPhone's coming out, people stop buying phones waiting for the next iPhone. What's it going to be? And they're like, on the warpath advertising for, hey, guess what, there's a new iPhone coming, so everybody's buying phones. And as we talked last week about the Samsung, like, the iPhone outsold the Galaxy like 3 months or three quarters after it got launched. In the Galaxy's first full month, it outsold the Galaxy. It's just like, what are you guys doing? Are you crazy? But just,
well, it's almost like what they're learning now is that, well, this may not be true of the Galaxy, but I would guess for a lot of Android phone buyers that, you know, they're not looking for the absolute latest and greatest and best, you know, which, again, the Galaxy might be an exception to that, you know, so they're not going to get one every year, every 2 years, because they're like, man, it still works, why would I replace it? And, you know, whereas with the iPhone users, there's very few of them who are just, you know, oh, it still works, why would I get a new one? You know, they're trying to get that bleeding edge. Unless you're weird, but
yeah. Well, I'm definitely in the former category, but I just, it's funny, I love the juxtaposing commercials, because every time Samsung comes out with one, Apple comes out with another one, and Apple came out with a MacBook Air commercial where they literally didn't even show the keyboard or the screen. Like, they didn't show OS X. It's actually kind of a cool commercial where they're basically, you ever seen the sticker art that people put on their Macs and stuff, you know, around the Apple logo? They basically took a collection of those and do it kind of like a slideshow timed to music. And it looks cool. It's really cool. And they're just kind of showing off the type of people that use Macs and that type of art, and never really talk about what the iPhone is or any of their competition, or Mac is, or any of their competition or anything. And it's just one of those, like, you know, because with the Galaxy, like, with that commercial, they weren't trying to, I think, They weren't trying to sell a specific phone, obviously. They didn't hit up. They didn't highlight the phones. They didn't do anything. They were trying to sell the general, like, Samsung is more advanced. Samsung is the bleeding edge, I think, is right. what they were like. That was the image they were trying to sell. And I think, and accidentally, you know, made a bunch of people aware of what Apple was doing and where they were going. And whereas with Apple, I think what they do, you know, with their commercial, and one of the reasons why I like their commercials so much is because it's like they're showing you, this is our community, this is what we're about, and they're not, you know, it's effectively the same type of commercial. It's a culture commercial. What's the culture of our company? What's the culture of our product? What's the culture of the people that are using it? They don't like poorly highlight their competition at the same time.
That's interesting. So first, I got two thoughts. That first one, the thought about the Samsung commercial, it totally reminds me of the Microsoft commercial they used to do with the tablets, and you know, with Windows 8 compared to say an iPad, and they would use Siri as the voiceover, be like, oh, you can run multiple apps. Oh, I can't do that. I'm not allowed to do that. You know, and they would do that, and it was one of those where you kind of got done and went, okay, clearly they faked Siri, because Siri doesn't say those things. And it was like, and it highlights one really huge feature that iPads have that Windows doesn't.
Right.
Which is Siri. And, you know, it was kind of like, I get what you guys are doing. It's creative. Maybe missed the mark just a little bit.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
And then my other thought is that in marketing, there are different stages to the marketing cycle. Let's see if I can do this off the top of my head. So when you launch a new category, okay, and I'm trying to think of what might be an example of that. You know, if it's like, I don't even know. Okay, let's say, if it's this new thing that no one's done before, all right, some sort of, call it a smart home product of some sort, okay?
Yeah.
And no one really knows what it is or how it works or why you should have it, your advertising is spent talking about the smart home, the industry, if you will. Is that you, and you need to educate people on what is a smart home, what are the benefits of it, kind of ignoring your personal brand because you're the only brand really that's out there because you're the very first one in this, and they're like, once they go searching for it, they'll find us. And maybe,
yeah.
I feel like in some ways the solar panel market, if they ran advertising campaigns, would be in that group of products right now. You know, where, again, there's, we just need to teach people about these types of products, this specific industry. So it's very general. And then what happens is over time, the consumer, the customer, they get it, right? They're like, okay, I get the benefits of a smart home. I get the benefits of a solar panel. I understand the basics of how it works, right? I'm no longer paying the power company. I have an upfront cost, but then I reap it, you know, years to come, right?
Right.
I'm going to stick with solar for now. Eventually, what you would see then is they go, okay, people get those general concepts. So now all the advertising is going to say, pick our company because we have the cheapest startup costs and we're the most efficient.
Mm.
You know, and so people get it. Oh, okay, yeah, there's a startup process. You skip over that part. Now you're giving them the specific benefits of your company.
Right.
Right? And now people can say, okay, I'll choose this over that, over whatever. And then what you'll see is eventually it will transition to a point where you've got a big dog and you've got the other guys underneath.
Yeah.
And what you'll see is that it'll then kind of what's the word? Bifurcate into two different types of marketing styles, where the big guy is just going to do the how do you want to say it? Like, hey, we're still the best. We've got these features and, you know, and these products. And then you'll watch the other ones do comparisons.
Right.
And what happens is when you're the big guy, there's this fear of if you mention somebody else, they're going to go, oh, there's other options. Let me go look into those. And so you're like, nope, where the biggest, we're not even going to acknowledge that they exist. Whereas the small guys are like, dude, everybody knows about the big dog, the 800-pound gorilla, so let's just admit it, and then
right.
tell them why we're better. And, you know, and so, right. and so what you're watching is in some ways, and then there's even one more step after that, for the big dog, for the gorilla, the big one, you know, and in some ways, that's where you see Samsung is. That's where you see Adidas at, or Reebok is actually one that's a big, you know, they do it a lot, where they will go after Nike, you know, and that's,
yeah.
Whereas, have you ever seen Nike even, like, admit that Adidas and Reebok exist?
You know, no, yeah, not at all.
It doesn't. Let's see here. Have yeah. you ever? Let's
just
see.
Do it.
Is it a Coke challenge or a Pepsi challenge? Which one is it?
right, it's a Pepsi challenge.
And so you see that all the time, and that's, you know, and that's that next stage. And oftentimes, the number two, they kind of got to hang out there. They don't have a choice. Now,
yeah.
the gorilla then gets to move on to that next. To the next level, and it kind of becomes a Maslow hierarchy of needs type of marketing strategy, where at first, again, it was, we educated you about the industry, then we told you why we were better, now we're going to continue, you know, now we'll still tell you why we're better, and then what you start to say is, and here's how we will help you actualize your life. And like, and it starts to make, again, it's hmm. it's what I would say an emotional appeal towards you. You watch this, you see this all the time with Coke commercials nowadays, where it has nothing to do with the drink. It's either cute bears or some cool dude doing cool things. Right? And it's either like, ah,
yeah.
fuzzy feelings, or, oh man, I want to be cool. That's cool. And so, because you're like, because the other thing that'll happen is that the features, you know, the big dog will stay here and the other guys will slowly, you know, catch up, or they might even start to exceed on the feature list, but they're just smaller for, you know, whatever reason. You know, which is what Samsung would argue that's the situation that they're in. Well,
yeah.
From a revenue standpoint, right? I mean, obviously from a volume standpoint, except for recently, you know, they were doing pretty well.
Yeah.
And when they first got started, they weren't, right? And so they were, anyways, you know what I'm saying. And so what happens is once your product starts to reach feature to feature, which one could argue Coke and Pepsi are similar enough, or I would say they're not going to change the taste anytime soon. They tried that and it didn't work.
Yeah. Turns out people like them the way they are.
Yeah. So as a result, if you're not going to change the product, you have to change people's perception about it. And that becomes the easy way to do that is to create an emotional appeal, to get people yeah. to like you.
It's too. So this is only tangentially related, but speaking of Coke and their advertising campaign, so they've moved the, you know, buy such and such a Coke from Europe, you know, where they put the name of, you know, put random names on Coke bottles.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had talked about it on the show because HP's doing the printers that's allowing them to do that. And I
yeah.
had just been in England and I had seen it all. And like, so it was very, it's coming over here and I'm excited because I'm like on the, I get it. And they're doing that one commercial where it's like a bunch of high schoolers that are buying everybody Cokes. And it's this cute girl that's like, you know, and they, you know, they got the guy behind the cash register, like, you know, keeps selling her more and more Cokes. And then the end of the day, like, she buys one with his name on it, and then they go outside and have this giant, crazy, illegal party in the middle of the street. And
yeah.
exactly, it makes it feel like it's real life, man. But I can't tell you how every store I walk into, I rifle through all of the Coke bottles looking for people's names, and I've bought probably a dozen Coke bottles in the last week. And I'm just like handing them off to people, like, because I see people's names and like, yeah, I got you a Coke, and I'm like, how am I this like gullible? Like, and it's like I know it's happening, but it like makes me feel good. It's terrible. I'm not even drinking them. I'm giving them to my friends because hey, this has your name on it. Your name, how you spell it, is how they spelled it on this bottle. So here's some sugar water. Like, it's so weird. It works so well.
Yeah, no, that's the number one word that people love to hear, the number one, I mean, it's like, my guess is that if you were to add up all of the other words together, it still would not come close to the number one word, is your own name.
Right.
And it's crazy powerful, which is why someone like myself who actually struggles to remember people's names, I spend a significant amount of mental energy trying to, like, especially in jiu-jitsu where, like, I will learn, you know, I'll meet, like, four people in a single night. Like, oh my gosh. That's jiu-jitsu? So hard for me. Yeah.
I'm going to learn jiu-jitsu.
There you go. And I will literally, like, be repeating their names, coming up with the mnemonic devices, like, while trying to roll and losing because I'm not focusing on what I'm doing. I'm focusing on their name. And it's because it's so powerful at the end of the class to be like, hey, Matthew, good job rolling.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's why, like, you'll see people repeat your name in emails, like, near the end and especially at the beginning. And it's just because people love it. And so that's what Coke has, you know, glommed onto. And I'm proud to say that it's HP that has made it no longer cost prohibitive
technologically possible.
Yeah. And that's why people love emails, because you can, you know, personalize some people's names as opposed to, I should say, that's why marketers love emails. Let me rephrase that. You know, because like with a mailing, you'd like, dear resident.
You're right.
Yeah. That's great. So it's, yeah, it's an interesting space. And so all of that was a huge build-up, a great education piece, you're welcome, was to say that what you watched with the Mac there was Apple going, at least implicitly saying, yeah, you know what? In some ways, a computer is a computer. Sure,
yeah.
There are some differences, but you know what? We're all surfing Facebook together. Whatever.
Yeah.
And so they're going to say, and they're like, yeah, we're going to make that emotional appeal, you know, and we're going to get after people. And so that's what you're starting to see. Now, that might also change again, because I know that they're bringing a lot of their marketing stuff in-house and whatever. They're making changes. So, and advertisers do get bored, so you'll see changes again. But, yeah, it's that's kind of where they're headed, you know. And so oftentimes, yeah, that's an example of them doing that. And, you know, and I don't know if they get a good response from it, that you'll see even more of them. They will probably continue to do, I'm going to call them feature-based commercials for their iPhones and iPads. But again, you'll notice them. It's not feature-based isn't really the way to say it. It's more like benefit-based, which is how it should be. Here are the things you can do with it, as opposed to here's how big the screen is, and here are the specs behind it.
But, this is the life you'll experience if you use our product and the cool features that we have. You know, not as opposed to look. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
But yeah, cool. Yeah, commercials are fun. They're fun to dissect. I took a marketing communications class in school, and we watched a ton of commercials. It was great.
That's awesome.
But then you obviously talk about it. What worked? Why didn't it work? And things like that. It was good.
Yeah. Did you ever figure out why nobody buys Ovaltine? Is it because they have a crazy annoying commercial?
Well, you know, that is one tactic. You know, it's you don't have to necessarily have to like it. It's just when you go to the store, you have to remember that's the one name you want them to remember.
Well, that's the one name I'll remember not to buy, because I will not support that company.
More Ovaltine, please.
God, that's an annoying commercial.
You know,
and it's funny. I think as an adult, if I were to put my fairness cap on, if I were my age now, I actually would be willing to go and buy Ovaltine if I knew there were kids around who enjoyed it, and I'd be willing to try it. But they like hit me at the one age that it was insufferable, and now I have this permanent mar on my brain if I'm not going to buy Ovaltine.
Wait, are you saying that the commercials don't annoy you today?
Well, I'm just saying I'm just saying I'll bet I would be more capable of accepting it, just because I, now that I'm older, I get annoying kids and I can deal with annoying kids. Like, whereas at the age that, you know, and so I, you know, or I should, you know, annoying kids aren't as annoying nowadays, which is definitely a sign of me getting older. but
gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
I don't know how to pronounce this company's name.
Ziacom?
Nope.
That's different. It's
Xiaomi.
I think it's Xiaomi.
Xiaomi.
Yeah.
Ugh, we're horrible. They're a Chinese company?
Very, yes.
Okay, good. Oh, popular Chinese smartphone manufacturer. There we go. Oh, the very first sentence, I just had to read it. So that smartphone company is coming out with a wearable fitness band.
Oh, baby, just like everybody
else. Yeah, because we need another one of those. So it's got a cool bunch. It's got a cool bunch of features, a bunch of cool features as well.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. They've got it. It can last 30 days on a full charge.
Holy cow!
That's not bad. It's waterproof. It's got a IP67 standard. I don't know what that is. Oh, that's part of the waterproofing. You can unlock and what is it? It's a zombie. We'll go with a zombie smartphone. Which is cool. And there's it's got the fitness stuff, right, where you can track your steps and other stuff. But and it's got some cool colors, very festive if you want. Oh, it's also got a sleep cycle, smart alarm. Woohoo. But the reason why I'm bringing it up and talking about it at all is because of the price.
Oh, yeah?
What is wrong with your... Oh, you're just messing with your screen. Okay.
No, sorry.
It's like I got this big hand attacking me. the price? $13.
Holy cowabunga. I mean, at that price, it's almost worth trying just to, because why not?
Yeah. I mean, that I look at that and go, that's stocking stuffer. Like white elephant love gift levels.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, like, I tried to find pedometers when I kept losing my Fitbits before I got the wrist-mounted one. I tried to find just regular old run-of-the-mill pedometers that don't have Bluetooth or anything intelligent about them, and those are like $15-$20, like, on
yeah.
Amazon. And that's a killer price.
It's crazy. And so I don't know. Obviously the big concern is quality.
Yeah.
But even for $13, all right, what if it only lasts 6 months?
Yeah. Well, the nice part is you only have to charge it 6 times.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean that's an impressive charge. Obviously, I think it's very shoehorned to their smartphone. I wonder how tethered it is to their smartphone. I wonder if it's like if it's not using Bluetooth, if that's how they're getting that kind of a charge out of it. If they're using some other simple FM band thing, really really streamlined. But that's just impressive.
Yeah, it's got to be using Bluetooth, right? I mean,
well, not necessarily. I mean, there's a lot of Bluetooth and Wi-Fi are tremendously wasteful when it comes to energy power, which is why a lot of your smart bulbs are like Hue, Philips Hue. That's the reason why they didn't put Wi-Fi chips in Bluetooth chips into them, is because if you use your own your own protocol, your own chips, your own antennas designed specifically for a task of like short range communication for specific pieces of information, you can cut out a lot of the junk that wastes power. That's the biggest cost. It's space and power. The receiver and the transmitter have to be compatible, which would mean that it wouldn't be generally compatible with all types of smartphones, but it would be compatible with their phones that have that specific antenna put into it. But I don't know. It doesn't say in this article if it's got Bluetooth. If it's got Bluetooth, I am incredibly impressed. I almost want to buy one just to see.
Yeah, I'm trying to see. It doesn't say, which I think says everything, right?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they said that. I mean, they imply that, given the battery life and price, it might be popular to those beyond even me fans.
Yeah.
Which are their phones. I don't know. I don't even know how to find out. Let's see here. Let's go. Mi Band Bluegrass. Oh, Michigan. I think so.
That's funny.
Like it. News. It's crazy cheap. Wearable Worlds. Let's see. Who would I choose? I would choose this first one. Let's see. What Google it has to say. When you think about it... don't allow. I don't need updates from the web. It's utilizing the industry's most powerful, efficient Bluetooth chip and accelerometer.
James?
Yeah?
Oh, sorry, you went silent me for a couple seconds there.
Can you hear me?
I'll bet you were typing and Google silenced you.
Oh, but you can hear me now? Hold on, folks.
Now, let's see. Can I change my settings? I can hear you now.
You can hear me now. And now he's gone.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you.
James, can you
hear
me?
What?
Okay.
Oh, yes, this is so much fun.
I know, sorry. I'm on Wi-Fi. I should be
so you can hear me.
I
just
have
not, like, replied. Okay, now you're actually replying to me. Good.
Yeah, okay, cool.
so it does have Bluetooth and an accelerometer in it.
Wow. I'm impressed. It makes me feel ripped off with my Fitbit.
Yeah, there you go. So, just check it out. We'll link to
it. I will. Very cool. Very cool. So, this week, Microsoft, it keeps moving, man. It, speaking of, you know, the big dogs, the 700-pound gorilla, last week, obviously, they had their... they had their new mission statement, and last week they fired a bunch of people, and now they're making changes to their product line, and the big move they're going to have moving forward is they want to unify their three most popular operating systems. So the question is, which three are we talking about, right? And Microsoft, obviously, Windows is one of their big ones.
Yep.
Windows Phone is another big one. But the third one, and this is the interesting one, I think, is Xbox.
Xbox?
Yeah.
I was not expecting you to say that one.
Yeah? Which one were you expecting? Did you have another one?
Windows RT?
Yeah, well, Windows RT is going to die. It's going away. RT is completely on its way out. But yeah, they're unifying all three. What they really want is they want a unified code base because, you know, there has been this drive within Microsoft for the last decade to try to get to the point where you can write a program, write an app, write an application, and... have it run on all of their different platforms.
Yeah.
That was the promise of the .NET platform, and that's what they're continuing to try to do that, and by unifying the code base and all three of those, they're hoping to, you know, go even further down that road. I think this is a big deal. I you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I've always been a big fan of that movement, and I think anything that they can do to help that is going to be great for the company. But what I thought was most interesting is, I didn't know this, Xbox actually has three different operating systems running on it. There's, when you hit the power button, bootloader takes off, and the BIOS takes off and starts launching the operating systems. And that first, like, splash screen is one operating system. And that operating system basically does two things. One, it launches an operating system that the games run on. And so there's a virtual machine that runs on top of that. That virtual machine is where all the games launch from. So all the graphics, all the back-end stuff, all of that is not actually like the core operating system. And that just gives them mobility and hardware and from platform to platform as they move through the different generations of the device. But they also launch an operating system that runs all of their applications. So Netflix and Facebook and Twitter and all these different like parts of their interface, their applications, those all run in this other world, this other virtual machine. And that's not Windows. Like, doesn't have anything to do with Windows. And basically, Microsoft is going, we don't know why that is. So we're going to change that. When I first started reading about this, I was like, that sounds like a terrible idea to turn Xbox into a PC. Like, what the heck is this business? But that's not what they're doing. They're basically saying, we're going to leave the video game computer, that virtual machine alone. We're going to do whatever we're doing with the base underneath. It's just the actual thing that runs the applications. And the whole drive there, obviously, is Netflix can then build one application that all it does is it scales to whatever screen it's on, whether it's a, you know, whether it's a Windows phone, Windows 9, or an Xbox, and it's on a TV screen. And one code base, one set of classes and objects and all the cool stuff that they have going on the back end, and then it just scales to the different UIs. They haven't talked about what the new different UIs are going to be, and because this is the biggest complaint about Windows 8 was it's trying to be all things to all people, you know, it's supposed to be good for a desktop.
No compromises.
Exactly. It's supposed to be a desktop, and it's supposed to be a tablet, which I think from a UI perspective has been kind of a disaster. At least from how people view it, it's been a disaster. Even if it's arguably a well-done strategy, people don't like it, and because it's overly cumbersome. And they haven't talked about UI at all from this direction. They're only talking about what is actually executing everything. So my hope is that what their plan basically is going to come down to is they'll have like all screens this size and under are going to have a certain UI. All screens that are attached to a keyboard or mouse are going to have this type of UI. All screens that are touch screens will have this kind of UI. All screens that are controlled with a joystick and a gamepad are going to have this type of UI. And I'm hoping what they'll do is they'll have like this thing underneath, which is their code base, and then as you
Hey, bud. Uh-oh. Looks like we lost Matthew. Hold on. We try to get him back. Send him a quick message. Lost you. Hopefully he'll reply. It's all right. He'll be back. He's trying right now. In the meantime, let's talk about the Furlough Bros. Store. If you love us, which you hope you do, you should check out furloughbros.com/store. There you'll find all sorts of awesome apparel. We've got a cool t-shirt. We've got a hat. We've got glass that you can drink from. It's pretty sweet. So feel free to check out the Furlough Bros store at furloughbros.com/store and pick up your whatever it is you're looking for.
So go ahead. I got a phone call, and that was just totally bumped me off the that was an unexpected consequence of using the iPhone. I'm not exactly sure. I hope they don't call back, because I hung up immediately. So go away.
You could put it on airplane mode and then Wi-Fi. That would solve
it. Yeah, the moment I do that, though, we're gonna go through this whole rigmarole again. So if she calls back, I'll do that. But and then hopefully they don't try to use FaceTime. So what was I? Oh, you know what? I can do not disturb. I can do not disturb it. Let's see here. Does that work?
Yeah.
You there?
So you're still there.
There we go. Oh, baby. Thank you, Apple, for your intelligence. I was talking about Windows and them unifying the code base and everything. I'm just really excited because what I'm hoping they do is they do something similar to what Apple is moving towards, which is, you know, they want one, you know, they're all running, all of their operating systems are running on the same kernel. So they're, you know, they're building up this code base in all their different, you know, languages. And I still think there's a real struggle for UI because it's, you know, the reason why Apple has stuck with iOS and OS X is because as soon as you introduce the trackpad or the mouse and the keyboard, life changes and you get these bigger screens that are doing more and life changes. And I don't think it's as easy as writing, it's easy to like say with Netflix, use Netflix as an example. But I think for some applications, it's not as easy as it would seem to be able to do all this kind of stuff, but it's definitely a good direction. And, you know, I think it's something that Microsoft needs to get done. It's hard to believe that they haven't done it yet, to be totally honest.
Well, that's because it's hard.
Yeah, yeah. And they didn't start like, you know, Apple went out of their way to take OS X and strip it down to its bare essentials, but yet have it be on the same core when they built iOS, so that as they built up iOS, iPhone OS, as it was originally called, as they built that up, it would have this parallel life to OS X. You know, now when they do things like continuity and when they do these things that allow you to do seamlessly, you know, share your apps and stuff from screen to screen, that sort of functionality is born out of that. And, you know,
well, that's fundamentally different approach, right?
I mean,
because when Microsoft is talking about it from a developer/programmer perspective, right? We want to make it easy for people to write one app and it works across all. We want to only focus on writing one version of code and have it work on all of them. You know, that's their point. Whereas Apple's still very much like, no, we have two operating systems and two code bases, and sure, there's things that are shared, but they're separate. But we want it to be a seamless experience for the end user.
Right.
So we're sharing the data, and we're letting the user know when they're using apps on either device, but it's not the same app. It's not the same code. They are different.
It's true. That's definitely true. I think they're moving more in the direction of, like, with Swift. Swift is, you know, and especially with Swift, it's this idea that they want, you can write an object that will run, you know, let's say you're making, I don't know, pages for Apple, for OS X and iOS. A lot of the classes that deal with how they, you know, render text and how they store text and all their different stuff like that, a lot of those things are going to be shared code between the two operating systems because they're running the same kernel, they're running the same machine code, and they're running the same, you know, basic kernels. So they're allowed to, they can build up programming languages that even though they're fundamentally different operating systems, you can have a shared code base. So I don't think it's that big of a difference, you know, and Apple, their big intention is to, you know, they make a big deal about the seamlessness for the end user, but they're doing a really good job of trying to make it relatively low friction for the developers as well. And I mean, and even just like as they build up more and more tools for like self-arranging applications, so that whether it's an iPhone 5 or an iPhone 4 or or an iPad or the Mac, there's a scalability between all these different, and they're not perfect. They're still got a lot of distance to go, but I think part of the problem that Microsoft has run into is the, you know, it's where Apple made the jump to the Unix kernel a long time ago, so everything is based on the Unix kernel. Whereas Microsoft wanted to do that with RT, they did do that with Windows Phone, but they're still on the x86 architecture for core Windows.
Yeah.
And that fact has just been a pain for them. I mean, it's been a real drag. And I think what you're going to see with this new direction to the unified code base is hopefully you'll see them get off the x86 architecture and move over to the Unix kernel, as opposed to dragging Windows OS and Xbox over to the x86 architecture, which would make no sense.
Well, no promises. No promises.
It is Microsoft. You know, and it's funny, they might find some way to, they might end up building a virtual machine that Windows runs as, where you're running, it's, you know, it's a VM it's a Unix VM. And, you know, and it's just a really, really lightweight x86 thing, so that it'll run on Intel chips as well as other stuff. You know, that might be a good direction. It's an interesting dilemma that they have from a technology perspective, but it's an important one because they're getting beat up all over the place by the ease of development, you know, and the fact that Android is all of virtual machines makes their life, you know, makes the developer's life super simple, because you got this one virtual machine that will, you know, you build different VMs to run the code based on the different architectures. And, you know, I don't know. It's an interesting dilemma, but it's one that they need to tackle if they're going to, you know, survive into the future.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, and it's like, it was interesting. At first, my thought was like, you know, and this really will set the foundation for them for the years to come. And then I was like, nah, that's not really true. It's just for the next couple of years it will determine, are they actually competitive or will they just continue on their current trajectory?
Right.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say it's a do or die, though for Satya it might be. But as for Microsoft, you're like, yeah, it would be nice to figure that out. But, you know, if they don't get it this round, they can try again in a couple more rounds.
Yeah. And, definitely.
You know, try to get it.
I do think this is, and I read this, this is, I love weeks like this where there's not necessarily any giant news that people are expecting. So a lot of your tech journalists will write really like their bigger thought pieces, because they've got time and attention from people to actually like throw out their bigger ideas. And one of them was an analysis of the Vista treatment. And you know, it's something that we've talked about oftentimes on the show over the years, is, you know, Windows ME was a disaster, but it led to XP, which was great. And then Vista was a disaster, but it led to 7, which was great. And it's almost like you have the one terrible operating system that kind of forces everybody be.
And the old phone call. It happens. It happens. Well, he is trying to get back online and working on that. I don't know. What do we want to talk about? So there's a new bulb out there called Ember Light, which is cool. It's a smart light bulb. The big feature behind that is that it is cheap, and so Matthew's back, so I wasn't originally going to talk about it, so now I will stop talking about it. But other than to say, the side comment to our listeners, not to you, because you, you know, we'll go down a rabbit hole if I say it, is that it's cool to see that being another example of a smart device where the prices are getting extremely competitive.
Yeah.
And because it just means that, in some ways, it's going to sound really weird, it feels like the market is starting to mature. Even though it's like, it also, I know, but also in the sense that, like, which sounds hilarious, because it's like, it doesn't feel like it started yet.
Yeah.
But there's, so it's, maybe the way to say it is, this current generation is starting to mature, paving the way for, or making it harder, I'm not sure, for the next generation. But anyways.
I'm sorry about that. I'm now fully off of T-Mobile. I can't get phone calls anymore. So I'm hoping that that's not an emergency phone call.
She
can wait. Yeah, it's true.
Or send you a text message, right? I mean, is that...
Yeah. It's true. It's one of
Anyways.
Our cousins, so I don't know why she'd be calling me if there was an emergency, but which is why I'm not too worried about it. I think I know what it's about. So Microsoft is they talked about, like, you know, that whole thing of, and so, you know, we've talked about this before and how, like, they go through these cycles of bad OS, good OS, bad OS, good OS.
Yeah.
And not necessarily from a technology perspective, but definitely from a perception perspective. How do people see it? What's people's opinion? Or
like in my case, it's the same thing.
Yes. fair enough. So Microsoft acknowledges this problem pretty early on. They deal with it, and how they deal with it is they change what they talk about. So when you look at, like, for one of the examples I give is press releases and the operating systems that are talked about in different press releases, and how often they're mentioned and how many press releases they're mentioned and stuff like that. You know, just looking at overall numbers of how much do they talk about stuff. When Windows 8 was coming along, the last year leading up to it, they talked about Windows 7 about half as much as they talked about Windows 8. Obviously, they wanted to move the conversation in the direction of, you know, the future, but they didn't want to forget about, you know, the past, because Windows 7 is still selling very well. Compare that to when 7 came out, where it was like a 10-to-1 ratio, where they almost did mention Vista and talked everything about Windows 7. And it was this acknowledgement of the fact that, yeah, it's just it was a disaster. And it was, and we were talking about, you know, we have talked about it before. And so about this on the show, and kind of just that observation of that sort of weirdness between they don't want to freeze the market, or they do want to freeze the market and, you know, move on to something else. And so this, our author did the same sort of analysis on Windows 8, and basically Windows 8 is getting full-on Vista treatment at this point.
Nice.
They keep talking about unifying the code bases and different operating systems, and just never mention Windows 8. Never comes up. Don't want to talk about it.
Huh.
and it's such a perception issue that, you know, when that, you know, we've talked about how, what's the strategy moving forward for Windows? Are they going to go the OS X route, where it's just iterative improvements, and each new generation, they, you know, it's Windows 8.1, Windows 8.2, Windows 8. Whatever, or are they going to, you know, keep these big generations of Windows, Windows 8, Windows 9? And once again, looks like they're going with the Windows 9 strategy. I mean, like, they realize they have got a marketing issue, and they are abandoning ship as quick as possible. It's fascinating in my, you know, to see this movement that's going on within Microsoft, and how they, you know, they clearly acknowledge the fact that it's a disaster.
Yeah.
At least internally, you know. So, oh.
Well, and Nadella's allowed to do that because it's not his baby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's, you know, I think that
I knew it was in trouble when I was in this all employee meeting at HP. We're all sitting in the cafeteria, and they had the head of the PC division there, and he was just like, I'm trying to remember the exact. He goes, "So Windows 8's a piece of garbage," but I don't think he said garbage.
Whoa.
And yeah. and I was like, hmm. And I mean, it hadn't even come out yet. And so he was like, "So we'll see how that plays out." And I was sitting there just like, wow, that's pretty bad when we're kind of a partner and we depend on Windows success here. And
right.
You know, I mean, even if we don't like it, I don't feel like we would acknowledge it at this stage of the game. Because, yeah. Just, yeah. I feel like that would hurt our sales. And it did, and, you know, surprise, surprise. But, yeah, just, like, I'm like, man. And he's that, you know, when you kind of get up to that level, you become a cheerleader. You forget about what reality is. And
yeah.
Whatever your company's doing is amazeballs. And you just kind of, you go with it. And you're that company cheerleader type person. And to have him not do that, it was like, wow, that must be really bad.
Yeah. Well, that's because it was.
Yeah, so I'm, none of this is a surprise. We kind of knew it.
Yeah.
I had a guy the other day. He goes, "Hey, I got a Windows 8 question for you." Went, "That's great. I can't answer it for you. So far I've managed to avoid it." So, which I avoided Windows Vista. I'm going to knock on wood real quick here. And hope that I keep it going. Because I am getting a new computer for work, and the possibility exists that I get stuck with 8.
That'll be rough. It's not as bad as Vista. At least it's stable, you know. Vista was a disaster because it wasn't just that it wasn't. One second. I'm doing my podcast. This is totally live. We are actually
for the world.
How's it going?
See.
Hey everybody, this is Holly.
Hi Holly.
We are live right now. No, they can.
Oh.
Like, they can see in here. So, we're talking about technology. Can I have this conversation afterwards? Sorry, I hate to be this way.
Well, no.
So, anyways, we got an audience now, which is exciting.
Awesome.
What was I discussing? Microsoft. Yeah. Anyways, you were getting off of Vista, that's right.
This is a clean podcast,
right,
please.
Yeah,
so you're saying Windows 8 isn't as bad as Vista, because Vista was not only not the greatest design, but it was unstable.
Yeah,
as well.
Exactly. And whereas Windows 8, they don't have the issues that Vista had. So it's one of those things where, you know, the company is in a much better position going forward than Vista was. And
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see.
I understand, dude. I love it. This is one of those weeks.
This is awesome. I'm sorry. Let's move on to the next topic,
which is better than was it last week or 2 weeks ago where I totally dogged it at the end. I like this better. It's more entertaining. All right. Let's talk about another huge company. So far, we're hitting all the big ones. You know, why not? Let's just keep going.
All right.
And so we just love, man. We love just hating on them too. So. This next one we're going to talk about is Amazon, because the Fire Phone is finally available for people to check out. And so Engadget wrote this pretty long, you know, fairly lengthy review of the Fire Phone.
Yeah.
They did not like it.
Yeah, I was...
There's your spoiler.
Yeah, that has been the...
I mean, in the title... It says, a unique device, but you're better off waiting for the sequel.
Yeah,
that's not the kind of reception that you want. And this guy, he goes, I don't remember where he says it in it, but he's like, man, I really hope that this is not a surprise to Amazon, that people don't like it. I hope they know that it's not done yet, because if this is a surprise and they thought that this was their best foot forward, missed the mark. So, the real quick, the pluses and minuses that he sees, is that Mayday works pretty well. That's that, you know, you press a button and you get a customer service guy.
Yeah.
Pretty quick. It comes with a free year of Prime. It's like,
nice.
That's good. Yeah, that's worth, what is it now, $160 or something crazy like that, $120?
I think it's just 100, but yeah.
Well, no, they just recently upped it. It was 100, and now it's 100 and a little more.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, and they're like, call the quality's good, I guess, to which it's kind of like, yeah, that's a low priority option. But anyways, things that they don't like, shouldn't be a surprise, a little bit smaller, a little larger list here. It's exclusive to AT&T with no global options.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, I got the exclusivity. The global one, you're like, huh, that's interesting. So I wonder how much money they're having to hand over to AT&T to handle this phone. Or let me rephrase that, how much AT&T is not handing over to Amazon for this.
Yeah, I wonder why that is. It's got to be an antenna issue that it doesn't have a global GSM technology built in.
Yeah, that's weird. My guess. Yeah, so how about this one? The 3D effect?
Yeah.
Causes motion sickness.
Oh, jeez.
Which, apparently, he loves it. This part, he goes, we talked about that, and he goes, people who get motion sickness, they're not going to be able to handle this. And they're like, no. We've worked it so that it's fine, and that it won't affect people. He goes, okay, my wife is prone to motion sickness, and, you know, want me to have her try it? Like, yeah, sure. Challenge accepted. Yeah, 2 minutes later, she put it down and was like, yeah, I can't do this.
That's unfortunate, but...
So there's that. The limited apps, obviously.
Yeah.
And I want to talk a little bit about the weirdness behind that. Because there's also the dynamic perspective and Firefly needs some work. I can't remember what dynamic perspective is anymore. I thought that was the same thing as 3D.
That's what I thought too, because the whole dynamic perspective thing was it's got the four cameras and two of them at a time are looking at your face, and they know where your face is, so they can shift the perspective based on that.
Yeah, you know what? It is the same thing. Other than the gestures piece, maybe that's... I don't know. I think it's the same thing. I think he hated it that much that he put two bullet points. I think that's what's going on here. And so Firefly is the one where, in theory, you can hold your phone over something and it can recognize it and pull it up and tell you what it is on like Amazon Store, or it can listen to a song or listen to a movie and it can tell you what it is.
Yeah.
That's kind of what that is. So he's like, yeah, it's okay. Doesn't work great. The dynamics perspective, again, we kind of talked about his issues there. So how about this one for a fun little weirdness? So coming back to the limited ecosystem, what he tried doing was he tried sideloading a couple of apps onto the phone that weren't officially in Amazon Store.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what it was. Nothing too crazy. He says what would happen when he did that was that while that app was running, not only did it not have any 3D effects or anything, but it caused the rest of the phone to jump and be jaggedy. And yeah, he was like, and then the second I turned the app off, the phone was back to normal. He was like, so that limited ecosystem is actually a really important component to this, because it means if it ain't in the store, you don't want to download it.
Weird.
Yeah, yeah. And then he said most of the So he goes, there were a couple apps where the 3D effects were, you know, they were genuinely cool. He goes, but a lot of apps, like, for example, he said, like, Mint, they added one, so it makes their headings look kind of, they move and rotate.
Yeah.
Like, so they can say that they have it, but that's, it's not adding anything to the application. And, you know, which is the thing that we've talked about before, right? If you're going to have something like that, it's got to do it in such a way where it has to have this. Otherwise, the app makes no sense.
Yeah, and it was sort of like, you know, back when GIFs first started cropping up on the internet, like back cheesy GIFs where like they were like flashing things. And, yeah. You know, the early 2000 websites, you know, that are just super ugly because everybody was like, wow, look at what you can put on a website. You know, it's just... You know, and that's the same thing where it's, yeah, you don't want to avoid that. You want to just put, you don't want to put in UI elements just because it's there. You don't want to use Papyrus font just because it's there. You want to use it because it's good and it's right, you know?
Yeah, I said the other one is that if you move the phone too fast, it stops the perspective. It'll literally freeze and then jump to the new spot.
Huh.
And he goes, you know, and he's like, you know, obviously, I mean, if you're going crazy with your hands, right? Sparkle fingers, yeah, it's not going to work. But yes, that was a good reference for those of you.
Yes.
But he's like, but even it, he goes, I didn't feel like I was moving it too crazy fast. It couldn't keep up with me. So, little frustration on that part there. And because of these awesome features that they're trying to include, hampers your battery life and overall performance.
Yeah, well, that's...
And he's like, dude, the thing just looks like it's a beta phone, where they, it's like it's just plain Jane. It's not cool. And in the era of expensive phones, have to kind of look cool. It's like it doesn't quite hit the old mark here.
Huh.
So,
I think hopefully they realize that this is just their first generation, and you know, like he said, hopefully they're not under any false impressions about what it is and what it's capable of. But you know, you get a couple of people that are gonna, you know, come in and be able to what's the word I'm looking for, you're gonna get, hopefully people will start to buy it. You'll get to sell a couple of phones, you'll get a couple of developers, people will start to build up the technology, and you know, they'll move forward. Like you think about Android when it first launched was panned as terrible, and obviously it's not that anymore. And iPhone, you can't cut and paste. You know, like there's a lot of these things where first generation, where you're doing this sort of stuff, yeah, it's a stumble. They, you know, companies don't just come out, you know, guns blazing, especially when you make big jumps like that. I do think that it's really interesting that the phone starts to lag graphically when you introduce other apps in there, and I wonder if that's it's got to be, because I can't imagine that that's a performance issue where it's like it doesn't have enough horsepower. It's got to be like an interrupts issue where whatever build of Android that they've done, it, you know, they're fundamentally messing with the graphics, or you know, how the UI elements are displayed, which has been a notoriously difficult thing for Android to deal with, because it was, you know, especially in the first few years of its lifespan, as it was built for a completely different interface. It was built for a keyboard with a little ball. And, you know, and so a lot of their performance issues early on were built around that, you know, that it was the wrong, it was the wrong technology for what they were doing. And they basically were having to overcome that by just putting more horsepower behind it. And I wonder if the phone is not powerful enough, and that's the issue, or if there's a fundamental flaw in how they built the UI that's causing side-loaded apps to completely mess it up. Because that's a bigger issue. You know, if the phone's just not powerful enough, well, yeah, in 2 or 3 years, you'll get a more powerful phone, and it'll look better, and then it won't be a big deal. But if that's not the case, and that's just going to go on forever, you know, that's a real issue. It's a major detractor from it being an Android quote unquote phone.
Yeah, at the very end here, he talks about how the chips that they're using is a couple generations older. He's like, it's not bad. And he goes, but if you turn the dynamic perspective off, he goes, it runs a lot better.
I believe it.
And so, you know, he's like, But at that point, too, you're like, if I'm not, if I'm going to just turn that feature off, why am I getting this phone?
Yeah. I'm probably going to, I'll probably go and try it out at an AT&T store for a couple of minutes. I think it sounds cool, but yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that there's shortcomings, and they're getting criticized even heavier because, you know, it's Amazon. They're such a big dog, but everybody has gotten criticized crazy when they introduce new technologies like that and a bunch of new stuff into a phone. And, you know, Apple, Google, Microsoft, they've all gone through it, and most of them have gotten better. And, you know, but you gotta hold your breath and make it through the first couple of years as a company. And, you know, if you're an early adopter, yeah, it's exciting, and you get to be the early adopter, and that's, you know, it has a certain value, but I'm not shocked that it's not ready for mass adoption yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would be more surprised by a screening success out the gate.
Just making a phone is hard, which I do remember a certain BlackBerry CEO saying that, but that's...
It's true.
Yeah, and maybe it's not a phone, really. It's a computer. It really is.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's even more than that, I guess. It's crazy, but... Yeah, if there were a company that would have staying power, it would be them.
Yeah.
They're willing to iterate. They're not dependent on it at all. So... You know, they just keep making their phones.
Exactly. They're irritating their investors a bit, but that doesn't have anything to do with the phone. And they still, I mean, they've got crazy revenues and you know.
Yeah.
And a game plan. You know, the investors are treating Bezos like they treated Jobs, where it's like they're upset with his strategy, but he knows what he's doing. He's building a monopoly, and monopolies lose money. That's the one thing about monopolies that you forget, is that you got to lose money for a long time with monopolies before they're a monopoly, and then they just become juggernauts, you know. And
yep.
Amazon is well on that way. It's expensive to destroy traditional commerce.
Yes, it is.
But he's doing it pretty well, so you know, I won't hold it against him. I honestly think if Google and Apple don't pay attention to this phone in 5 years, that'll be a mistake. Because they've got Bezos is this kind of guy, whereas if he thinks it's a good idea, he's going to stick with it. He's not going to abandon it. He's just going to see it through, and they'll just let them keep spending money and making it better and better and better. And I think he fundamentally believes that a phone that is based completely around the idea of it, you know, it sells stuff and is really important. You know, I think that he thinks it's important. It's important to Amazon's future. It's important in a world where the, you know, stores are going away, and so he's not going to give up, you know. And there's some, and they can afford really, really, really smart people, and they've gotten, you know, it's funny, you know, obviously it's getting panned, but most reviews I've read have said that it's like, there's no compelling reason to move to it. There's no compelling reason to go there. They're not saying it's untenable. They're saying, I just don't. There's negatives, there's positives, there's not enough positives to make me move away from these other platforms, which is a decent place to start, you know? It's like, yeah. From now you build, you get better engineers, you get people, you get third-party developers, and, you know, who knows, in you know, 2-3 years, man, oh, geez, you could have a phone that really rivals, you know, other Android phones out there. You know, chances are they're not gonna rival the iPhone in 3 or 4 years, but who knows? I mean, you know, I don't think they're gonna be the number one or even number two necessarily, but you know, there's space for them to be a major player. And they're the kind of company that has the stomach to do what it takes to get there. You know.
You almost wish they would. You know, I mean, they did a good job with this with their Kindles, of being a secondary device. Yeah, we're not your primary phone. We're not the one you're going to carry with you all the time, but we're the one that you're going to have nearby.
And yeah,
yeah. That might be a hard play as well.
I was going to say, I don't know how you would. I don't know how you would do that. I don't know what you would do to position yourself as that. But yeah, the Kindle's a perfect example of a device that I spend money on their store all the time, that I keep with me all the time. It goes with, you know, if I'm, you know, I'd rather have that in my phone than anything else. You know?
Yeah. Hmm. I don't know. Well, if you get their phone, then that's all you have to have.
Oh, just baby. Yeah, but then I wouldn't be happy with my phone, so.
Ah, yes. Yes. I understand.
Especially as a T-Mobile user that went so far out of my way to get out from underneath AT&T.
That's true. That is also very true.
But, you know.
So speaking of smartphones, why are they getting bigger?
So this is a fascinating little article, and I think it's definitely worth going and checking it out. Going to furloughbros.com because they got this little cool interactive graph there, where they plot cell phone size versus time. And basically, what happens is it's kind of predictable in that what you basically have is this there's like this slope. It's basically like a hill. You've got this sort of like line that goes up over time, and then you got a bunch of dots underneath it. And basically saying, you know, every time a new phone is released, it comes out with a certain screen size. So the smaller screen sizes keep getting built, but these bigger phones keep getting released as well as time goes on. But what's really fascinating about it is you basically have these trend setters that like crop up, where you'll have a phone that like a Moto X, boom, and it is a specific size, and the phone's popular and it does well, and then you see this trail of phones that get released, you know, months later, years later, that are all the exact same size. And so basically what they're arguing is that the reason why phones keep getting bigger is you'll have a particular phone that sells well for some reason, and not necessarily because the screen is bigger, but it's got a bigger screen. And as soon as you've got a phone that sells well, everybody locks onto that size and sticks with it. All the other, you know, so this trend isn't of bigger phones isn't necessarily just because that's what consumers want. It has a lot to do with the fact that the manufacturers see a phone that does well, and then they all copy it. They copy the feature set. They copy, you know, what does it do? How does it do it? How big is it? What does it look like? What's its size? What's its weight? What's its thinness? And what's its resolution? And then it takes somebody else to try something different. So we'll make a bigger phone or a smaller phone or whatever. And if one of those hits, you know, they hit the market and it's something that gets people excited, all of a sudden everybody looks to that phone. And they all key off of it. And so you get, and it's funny, like it's weird. It's not even like kind of a jagged line of phones that are similar in size within a couple of percentage, but no, it's like if a 4.8 phone took off, there's a string of 10 4.8 inch phones.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
I do think it's really fascinating that the iPhone is being pegged at 4.7 inches, and there are like only two 4.7 inch phones out there. That's not one of the big sizes that everybody keyed on to. And I don't know. I don't know what that means, really. I don't know what that means for Apple. I don't know what that means for the future of phones. But it's just, you know, as phones have commoditized and continue to over time, one of the consequences of that is, you know, everybody's just copying each other. And it's not necessarily that customers want that. It's just that they get excited about one good advertising campaign for a particular phone, and then everybody copies it, and now that becomes the new standard, you know, for the industry. But, you know, at some point it's got to stop, this whole trend of bigger and bigger and bigger, because we're not going to be carrying around 30 inch TV screens with us and calling them phones. But it's interesting.
Yeah, I'm looking at the chart, digesting the information, and then they give kind of what are your five scenarios, right? The marketing gimmick, like you talked about, Apple got the screen size wrong. It's actually bigger. It's based on those influential phones, like you were just talking about there, or the smartphones turning into our primary computer, which I also think has. They all have a little bit of truth to them, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those, yeah, when the phone first came out, you know, who could imagine what we would be doing on them today? And so the thought that it would need to be that big wasn't even in the realm of, you know what I mean? Of,
yeah.
You know, like, oh, yeah, this is what needs to happen. You know, yeah. So, or it would make, it didn't make sense for it to be bigger, given the limited tasks that we had in our mind that we could do.
Yeah.
Now, you know, and now we're like, oh my gosh, we could do this, all this other stuff. You go, oh, sweet. You know, using two hands isn't a horrible pain.
So, yeah.
We can figure out how to stretch our fingers. Yeah. That kind of stuff.
Exactly. Or,
it reminds me of,
file down the tips of our fingers.
Yeah. Well, and it totally reminds me of, and I think I've shared this on the podcast before, but I'll give a quick recap. When HP did their market research on the laptops, and you know, when they went and talked to consumers, all of them were like, "Well, we want one with the longest battery life possible, of course. We want it to be as light as possible, you know, of course, and." You know, we want it to be a powerful machine.
Yeah.
And so that was where, you know, HP, like they did these, you know, they had kind of asked those questions, and they did these focus groups, and they were asking him about, you know, would you prefer to have a heavy computer or a light computer? I'm like, well, I want one that's light.
Right.
You know, and so they asked him all these questions, and they got those answers. And so then they had these mock-up models where we went, okay, listening to your feedback, here's these computers that we've designed to make it happen. You know, and like one of them, that, you know, this focus group person's looking at the mock-up, and he goes, well, where's the CD drive? And because this was back in the day of CDs, and they're like, oh, well, we took it out. There's this other attachment that you would have to attach into the USB port. Or do you remember, this might even have been before that, remember Mom had this one laptop where you actually, like, the floppy drive came out?
The whole drive popped out,
yeah. The entire drive popped out, and then you would pop in a CD drive and replace it. And they were like, yeah, because you said you wanted it thin, and that was the one of the ways we got it thin, is we just, instead of having both a floppy drive and a CD drive, we just, you get to choose one or the other. They're like, okay. Where are my speakers? And they're like, well, in order to make it thin, we got rid of the cones, and so there's no more speakers. And they're like, but what if I want to listen to music? They're like, well, headphones. You got your headphone jack. You know, you're not going to be listening to speakers while on an airplane, right? And so, you know, and it was funny. They were like, you know, the punchline of it was these customers were like, what if you put them both in there and the speakers and these other things? And you know, yeah. HP's like, that's like the complete opposite of what you asked us to do. But what, you know, and so what happened was, it was this, they wanted all these features.
Yeah.
And they were, it was what they, HP didn't ask the questions right. And thankfully they, you know, the customers helped them out, where it was like, if given the choice of saving, you know, space and weight versus not having this feature, I'll take the feature.
Yeah.
You know, I'll deal with it. I'll buy a bigger backpack. I'll, you know, whatever. And so that was where, you know, and then HP started coming out with these mammoth machines that were, you know, they were huge, but they had all the features.
Yeah.
And they could do everything. And battery life wasn't fantastic, but they were like, well, that's all we could do without it becoming a massive brick.
Right.
And so they did that. And so the point of that being, it was kind of, it feels like it might be a similar story where it was like, well, yeah, I want a small, convenient little phone. Because when they were flip phones and you weren't actually taking pictures and all you were doing was texting, you know, or you weren't even really texting at the time, really. That was just starting to take off. All it was phone calls. Yeah, make it as small as possible. That's exactly what I want. You know,
yeah.
Give me a good battery life. I don't want to have to charge it every day. Make it small. And so that was what they did. And that same frame of thinking carried over to the smartphone world. And, you know, and Apple modeled it after what they saw for the Treos and the Blackberries, where those were the approximate sizes of them. You know, those phones weren't huge. And yeah. That was their starting point. And And that was just their mental model of, well, we want to keep it as small as possible. I mean, you think about, like, even with their 5S, right? They were like, let's get this thing as thin as possible. And I'm kind of like, actually, I'd actually prefer it to be a little bit thicker, a little bit heavier, and last 2 days. That yeah. would be kind of cool. I would. That's a trade-off I'm willing to make. And people have already voted with the screen sizes, right? You know, if I could get a little bit more real estate, and I could see more. My video could be a little bit bigger. Whatever, I can see more. The picture's a little bigger. Okay, yeah, that's a trade-off I'm willing to make. You know, and so I think that's a similar thing as to what we're seeing. You know, which is this. So I'm headed down less of the marketing gimmick track.
Yeah.
And more towards the Apple got the screen size wrong, and, you know, computers are turning into our primary devices.
Yeah.
I
would go so far as to say Apple didn't necessarily get it wrong. They just, you know, I think when it first started out, like you said, that was what the sizes everybody was using. It's just that over time, as you get these inflation of feature sets, people want bigger screens to deal with it. And I'm
going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say that when you laptops followed a similar course, where, remember when laptops first came out, the screen sizes were small.
Yeah.
And it was purely from a technological, like, we cannot make these things any bigger because we're already charging $3,000 for this laptop.
Right.
And then what we watched over time is they got bigger.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, to the 17-inch monitor, you know what I mean?
They're huge.
Beasts of a machine. They were awesome. They were big. And I think I've even seen bigger than 17 inches in a couple cases. And then what you watched was they went, okay, that was too big.
Yeah.
let's shrink it back down. And you're actually watching it now go into the opposite direction. Well,
I mean, and Apple is a great case study for this. It's, you know, the 17 inch has gone away. They realized that they decided that, you know, they weren't selling enough to justify it. So they do 13 and 15 inches, and that's because that's kind of where the bell horn of what people are. 11 is about as small as people will go, and 15 is about as big as people will go. And
I think you'll find the same thing with phones.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and I do think that there's, you know, there's definitely two different type of phone customers, and you've got to acknowledge the fact that there are tablet owners and there are non-tablet owners. And if you're the sort of person that owns a tablet, you want a smaller phone. If you're the sort of person who doesn't own a tablet, you want a bigger phone. You want a phablet. And, you know, and culturally, you know, different regions of the world, they, you know, we've talked about this before. China, they want phablets because they don't want to own a tablet and a phone. In America, we own a tablet that we put in our purse or our bag, but we carry our phone around with us everywhere, so we want a smaller phone. And we, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it's one of those things where you just, that's the direction we're going.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. It is kind of cool, though, to see this plotted out on a chart. And the copycat thing is pretty interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, I'm also not totally surprised either.
Oh,
that seems to be working. Let's do it. Plus, depending on, you know, another thing here, I know he mentions manufacturers have always wanted a larger screen size because you can charge more or something like that. You know, I think part of it could be if you got a shared manufacturer and they're like, well, we're already producing this size glass and we can give you a deal.
Yeah.
Huh. I'll take that size glass, please.
Yeah.
Because in this game, pennies count.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the fabs, the idea that the fabs are already tooled up for a particular size LCD or a particular piece of glass, that absolutely is legitimate. And, you know, then they can maybe push it around a little bit, make it a little bit bigger, a little bit smaller, but they're tooled for a range of sizes, and you know, the first guy to do that, it's an expensive thing to do, but every subsequent one after that, it's, you know, becomes more and more viable.
Yeah, so I think that's how I've kind of see it. It does seem to be somewhere between that four and a half is not too bad of a spot to be in, or at least it's popular.
Yeah.
So you were saying, you sent me a text message actually. Let me see if I can pull this up real quick. You were saying that... I was giving you all my Lockatron. suggestions. You see, I'm calling it now. Apple will only release a 4.7, not a 5.5.
Oh, yeah.
Is that because of this article?
No, it's I've been reading a couple of different things, and I'm just at this point, I'm, you know, Apple's not going to release the bigger 5.5 because I've not seen one. I still say that nobody's leaking them. They're not manufacturing them yet. You know, and I do think Apple is very involved in the control of leaks. They like to set that kind of information out there, but they're not in absolute control. And the fact that you only see the 4.7 phones and you don't see the bodies, you don't see the 5.5 bodies, that's part of it. Part of it is this article and just kind of like the direction they're going and stuff. But I don't think, you know, I think they're working on it. I think they want to do one, but it's just not going to happen this launch. And I don't think you're going to see it this year.
Okay. Fair
but,
enough.
Yeah.
Oh, God, my knee really hurts. Ow, son of a
my knee's fine.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Oh, man. Live with an audience. This is awesome. Okay. Matthew's on mute because I'm guessing something's happening beside him. You could just nod if that's the case. And yes, fantastic. So I am going to move on to Facebook.
Just trying to keep the podcast clean is all.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Facebook launched a feature that no one cares about this week. And so we're going to talk about it real quick.
Okay, perfect.
It's called Save, because now like these big companies cannot come up with creative names at all, which is whatever. It's a read it later for links, places, and pages that only works with Facebook content, is not cached, is hidden in the, you know, the more do it, and then to access it, you have to go through a set of menus to get to your saved items.
That's obnoxious.
Sounds like a winning product to me.
Yeah, nice job, Facebook. Kind
of should go the way of Slingshot.
Yeah. Nobody's even going to try it out. That's yeah. Geez, that's terrible. Hey, you know, I like the fact that they're. You know, we talked about this. We told them this is what we said they had to do. You got to break out the big blue app, try a bunch of different apps, and just see what sticks. You know, and that's what they're doing. It's the right thing to do, and they're going to have a lot of disasters along the way, a lot of failures for the occasional winner. And but you can't win if you're not trying. And so
that's true.
You know, you'd like to think that this
is obvious. I kind of could have told you this one before it got started.
Yeah, well, I'm sure when they started the development of the idea, though, and they started building the code, they didn't know the limit. They didn't realize how limited it was going to be.
They bought some company. What's their? I can't remember the name of the company, but they bought a company that was doing, you know, read it later app, and everyone was like, "All right, Facebook's getting into it. That's what we're going to use." And this is what they came out with.
Well, you know, yeah, yeah, it happens. Nobody's perfect.
True.
That's
all I want to mention for that one. That's all it deserves.
Cool. So I got one or two, probably just one. Bose is suing Apple. And this is one of those classic cases where, although the fact that, you know, Beats was a valuable company with a, you know, selling a lot of different stuff, they still weren't, you know, worth bazillion. Well, they were worth a few billion, but they didn't have billions on hand. And they started, so Bose claims, they started using Bose technology without permission.
yeah, of course.
And so I got to try out the Beats wireless studio headphones, their latest, greatest generation, and they're Bluetooth, they're noise canceling, and they're amazing. They're super nice. I mean, like, they are a really impressive headphone. But one of the features that they have, that whole noise canceling thing, yeah, definitely technology that's very owned by Bose. And I'm sure that there's space within that, their patents for other noise canceling type stuff. But Bose defends it, you know, as vigorously as they can. Thing is that, you know, compared to, you know, compared to Bose, compared to Bose, Beats wasn't a, you know, giant financial guy, and so they were kind of, they were in the wait and see mode. Apple buys them, basically did what Google did to YouTube, and, you know, a giant, very financially successful company takes over something that's stealing IP, and as soon as that happens and they're worth money, then the lawsuits come out. So Beats has started, Apple has been sold, Apple has been sued, now that they're technically own, you know, stolen IP through Beats. And like I said, it's basically what happened with YouTube and Google back in the day when Viacom was the biggest one, where they, you know, all of their content was being taken and put on YouTube, and it was awesome, and it was, you know, all the music and everything was there, and Google buys them, and all of a sudden the lawsuits come out like crazy, and because they got money, they can afford the lawsuits. So
yeah,
the
classic.
Yeah, the vampires came out. But yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what comes here. I what I'm interested to see is if Apple's going to just cut a licensing agreement and say, hey, look, we're going to license the technology, you guys are right. Or if Apple's going to try to say, no, this is not your stolen IP, this is a significantly different, and, you know, and do their go their own route that way.
Well, they'll have the lawyers take a look at it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll determine if they have any merit or not. Because I don't know. I'd be shocked if Beats just blatantly ripped them off.
I don't know if I would be. You know.
All right. But that could be the case. In which case, Apple will be like, yep, don't worry about it. Here you go. Here's some money. Be quiet.
Yeah.
If they didn't, I've got to imagine that Apple's got some patents as well to back them up, and hopefully Bose has done their homework.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if that's how it ends, where Bose gets some license with some cool music tech, and Apple gets to keep the noise canceling stuff. Because it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I know how engineers think. If you want to learn, you see something that's cool, you want to incorporate it in your product, you go figure out how somebody else did it, and then you build what they did. And you don't even think about it as stealing. I figured out how they did it, and I did it myself. Like, I'm not allowed to do that? No, you're not allowed to do that. And, you know, I could see them have gotten very far down the road of manufacturing, developing this technology before they even realized, you know, Bose might not be happy about this. And then you start building it, nobody sues you, and you just don't even think about it. You're like, cool, we must be in the clear. And then, you know, and then all of a sudden Apple one day gets an email from Bose lawyers and goes, what the heck is this? You know, they never even I'm sure it was a surprise to Apple. I'm sure they didn't even see it coming. You know. Or, you know. You just don't think about it. You just assume Beats had taken care of that. It's not one of those things that you negotiate during these big, you know, big licensing things, these big buyouts. Beats probably didn't bring it up. If they were aware that it was a coming problem, I'm sure they didn't bring it up. And, you know, oh, oops, I forgot about that, sorry. But
no. Yeah, fun. I think that's not the last of the surprises that Apple will enjoy with that company.
Yeah. Well, there. It's true. So,
oh, well. Okay. All right. And then I want to finish it off with a small company.
Okay.
Because why not? There's a company called Hello. Great name.
Yeah.
They have created a, because I love these things, a sleep monitor smart alarm. Yeah! I love these things.
Nice.
They currently got a Kickstarter project going on right now.
So, nice.
By the time you listen to the show, as long as you don't take a month, you'll have an opportunity to get one. Well, technically, you can get it afterwards. You'll just pay a little more. But you know me, man. I love smart alarm type stuff. Have sunk more than $1 into these types of things. I bought the I can't remember what it's called again. You know, the thing that you put it on your wrist and it wakes you up, which I end up getting rid of it. And in retrospect, I wish I would have kept the little sleep band thing.
Yeah.
Because the Fitbit band is horrible.
Yes.
I don't understand why they thought that would be a good idea to ship with that.
So. I think that I've always looked at that as not necessarily that they put a lot of time or thought into that band for your tracker. It was just sort of they threw it in the box.
Yeah. So I've played around with the idea of like, I should make my own that's actually like scrunchie based. And then I went, oh, I already had one and I got rid of it. So
nice.
That's lame. But but even that is not a smart alarm. It's just a sleep tracker, which is fine.
Yeah.
And then what I currently have right now is a I don't know. It's a light where you set your alarm on it, and right now I have it to birds chirping. Yeah, that's right. Birds chirping. And what it does is it starts out with very quiet chirps and then gradually gets louder and louder. And at the same time, I don't know the exact amount of time to it, but it turns the light on when the alarm goes off. But it actually turns it on, it's like 20 minutes before your alarm goes off, and does a gradual brightening.
That's the idea awesome.
Of simulating the sun.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. Right now, the sun is doing a fantastic job of waking me up, and it's driving me crazy. But I wish it were darker out so I could take advantage of that.
There you go. During the winter, you can. So, yeah, so that's what I currently have. It's okay. It works all right.
Yeah.
And then, how I normally have it set is that alarm goes off, and then, like, 15 minutes later, I have my iPhone alarm go off, which is set out of reach of my bed. And so I'm forced to get up, and which it's a good combo. It seems to be working okay. But I'm always like, ah, man, I would love to, because their armband is lame, to do the sleep tracking thing and combine it with the smart alarm, because it just makes sense. Enter the sleep tracker. It's called Sense, of course. It looks like a ball, kind of like, do you remember the Nexus Q, Google's first foray into the television space?
I do remember that.
Think of it like that.
Product that never even launched, but yeah.
Yeah, but looks cooler
nice.
Than that. So it's pretty cool, and what it does, it has that like ball which does the alarm and the light and the sound and stuff. And then there's also a little, it's hard to tell the size of it. It looks like a little bit bigger than a quarter. Maybe the size of a large bottle cap or something. I don't know. Another sensor that you put in your, that you attach somehow on your pillow, which tracks your movement, which is how all the sleep tracking stuff works. So it's not on your wrist, it's on your pillow, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
And then there's obviously an iPhone app as well that goes with it. And so the idea behind it is that not only does it give you a sleep score and and tell you how you did, but it will tell you why you woke up at times. So it's like, so it could tell you, like for me, it'd be like, oh, there was a train whistle going off in the middle of the night, and that's why you stirred.
Interesting.
And as opposed to, your spouse moved.
Right.
Or something, you know, so it can tell you what it was because it's listening and it's not just feeling. And then, like I said, it does do the smart alarm thing where if it can sense that you're already semi-awake.
Sounds like a
relationship right now.
Sounds like a relationship coach. It's listening. It's not just feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's very similar to the Lark in that regard.
Yeah.
But man, I love these kind of things. They are awesome.
The real trick is, I like it because it's, you know, there's two.
There's more. Yeah, keep going.
There's two simultaneous technologies that you're working on. One is tracking your sleep, so you're aware of what your sleep is like. But the other one is waking you up well. You know, and I think those two are they can kind of take two different tracks, and they're going to intermingle over time, but. Oh, it's cool. I like it. I don't spend a lot of money and time on it, but they're cool.
So so the sensors that it has, it is an ambient light sensor to tell you what the lighting's like in the room, like you were experiencing, and it's like advice would be, dude, you need to make it darker or something.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, it'll be able to tell you if you had, like car headlights in your window or something. Like, whoa, this happened. I'll try to stop that. How about this one? Temperature and humidity sensors. So to help you find out, you know, help you determine what temperatures do you sleep the best at.
Interesting.
And then a particulate sensor.
Keep you healthy.
Yeah. So if you've got, it's a big deal if you got allergies. You know, do a pollen count and other stuff. I guess I don't know.
other things and whatnot.
Yeah, so they got a white and a black version of it, and if you kickstart enough money, they'll let you choose your own color. And if you gave $5,000, you cannot anymore because those have all been backed by the five backers. You could have actually gone to the San Francisco office and assembled your own. Which I'm like, I feel like you should be paying me to do that. But
yeah, that's funny.
It's part of the fun of it. Yeah, they estimate November of this year. We'll see if that happens.
Yeah, it never does. But.
Well, and here's why I know it won't. Because they had a goal of 100,000. They've got 26 days left to go, and they're at 924,000.
Ooh.
So it's already bigger than what they thought.
By nearly an order of magnitude.
So if Pebble is in the indicator, there will definitely be a delay message coming quickly. Yeah. Due to the overwhelming demand, we're changing our manufacturing process so that we can actually make all of these in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah. Which will take more time.
Yeah.
So. It's not a bad place to be, man. Very cool.
Yeah. So anyways, cool. I thought that was neat.
Definitely.
Well, dude, appreciate the podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Nice Saturday morning.
Earth the town. Yeah. Enjoy the rest of your day. We've got we're going to a wedding this afternoon, and then tomorrow is our anniversary, so we're gonna I think we're gonna go on a hike is the plan. Pull this dog along for like 8 miles, see how he handles that. He could do it.
That's cool.
I believe in him. Yeah. Alright. Let's see here. Did I do that right? Is there a horrible reverb now? Should be. All right. Everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow. My Saturday partying Herculean brother is Matthew Furlow. The arm muscle did help.
Thank you.
No problem. So we will talk next time. Thank you.